How would you like a 15% discount to my daily email, the stack of stuff, the show notes, discounts to the conference, all of that? All you need to do is text the word show to 33777. You'll get the annual subscription with a 15% discount to my daily email. You'll get the stack of stuff, the links to the show notes, discounts to the conference, and so much more. All you have to do is text the word show, S-H-O-W, to 33777. Text show to 33777.
Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, hour two.
My fellow Americans, welcome to the program. It is Eric Erickson here across the nation. The phone number is 877-973-7425. A kind welcome to the folks listening in Sacramento, California and Austin, Texas. We have moved into those markets. Our quest for global domination continues. Now, we've also moved live 11 to 2 Central Time in the great Tulsa, Oklahoma on KRMG. And waiting very patiently on the phones is a caller from there, Matt. And Matt, I want to talk to you to kick off this hour of the show because I was literally going to talk about this topic and I saw your phone call. I was like, this would be great. Matt and I could do this together. So I mentioned at the bottom of the hour, we have a declining birth rate in America. And there have actually never been countries to come back from that. Hopefully we can be the first, but a lot of people putting off kids, a lot of people deciding not to have the kids, and you wanted to talk about that, I know.
Yes, sir. So speaking on behalf of younger millennials / elder Gen Z, those of us who value raising a family and being responsible parents, we want to be able to do better for our children than our parents, as our parents did for us. And to achieve that nowadays, when considering the modern cost of living, much less raising a child, that's very difficult to do. And it leads us to delaying having children so that we have the financial ability to provide them both a loving and stable house to grow up in. So it's tough, even though that I share your considerations and your concerns as an individual, it's hard not to fall in the aggregate.
Yeah, okay, so I want to do an experiment. Let's do have kids first or get money first. This is in Google. Okay, here we go. Financial Samurai, before having kids, consider spending lots of money. Have a net worth goal before having kids. Net worth at birth of first child, what should it be? How much money to save before having a kid? Should you wait until you have kids, until you can afford them? How to prepare family finances before a baby? What you need to save to have a child, what your net worth should be. I mean, literally, you Google this, and like all of the financial data out there, with the lone exception of one person, is you got to stockpile your money before you have kids. Now, I will tell you, Dave Ramsey differs on this, but there's a great, great, great group out there, Matt, called the Institute for Family Studies. Brett Wilcox is the leader there, and they've actually studied this issue a great deal because it is one of the ideas. I hear what you're saying. You think that if you have a kid, it's going to be expensive to have a kid, and you're not making enough money to be able to afford the kid. That is a prevailing idea out there. So the Institute for Family Studies studied this idea because this isn't new. This goes back to the financial crisis in 2008. Where the view actually shifted. You can actually trace this idea of you got to have a certain amount of money before you have kids to the financial crisis in 2008 as your generation was starting to pay attention to finances and money. And then you get through high school and college and you're really thinking about it. And the data surprisingly doesn't actually hold up. And it's very, very counterintuitive because everybody, myself included, thinks I should save money before I have kids. What the data actually shows is that until you have kids, you don't actually have the real incentive to do so. And so you very often don't. And the people who have kids earlier at lower incomes long term wind up financially better off than the people who wait later to stockpile the money. It makes no sense. And I want to acknowledge it makes no sense. But what the Institute for Financial Studies has come to the conclusion in interviewing people who had kids when they didn't make a lot of money is that having the child necessitated the difficult decisions financially that they never were confronted with until they had the kids. And in
Eric, could
go ahead.
Just to cut in briefly,
oh, yeah.
Would you mind quantifying what not a lot of money is?
Just for the
sake of knowing that we're on the same page.
Yes. So we're talking about people who made less than $40,000 a year. They're at the marginal poverty line.
Wow. So you're saying folks below the poverty line were doing better if they had kids earlier compared to later?
Long term. It takes time and it's not easy. But so here's what the research is. We're talking people who make around $40,000. So we're not talking about extreme poverty, but we're not talking six-figure salaries either. Frankly, we're talking about people like me when I got out of law school, it was student loans and stuff. My wife and my combined salary was right around $40,000, $45,000. Here's what they found in their studies is that you think you're doing everything right, and the way you're operating is in theory. Because until you have the child, your entire existence planning for a child is theoretical. When you have the child, suddenly the rubber meets the road, and the people who have the kid begin to actually experience the financial decisions they didn't know they were going to have to make. And it sometimes takes reliance on government programs. It sometimes takes reliance on church. Sometimes takes reliance on family. But when you track someone long term who had a child early and wasn't making a lot of money, it turns out 20 years later, they have a greater financial savings and financial wherewithal and financial knowledge than the person who waited until they're 35 and was making six figures to have a kid. The person who waited until they're 35 and had six figures to have the kid winds up not meaningfully improving outside of their 401k. The poorer person,
I hear you.
Yeah, the poorer person is forced to save. The richer person isn't. And that's the counterintuitive thing that kind of like, I remember reading this report when it first came out. Surely this can't be. But actually, the data, now it's not just the Institute for Financial or for Family Studies that's come out. Now, there are Brookings and others have kind of shown the same thing. And really, I think what it is, Matt, for people who are like scratching their head over this, it's because any of us who have had kids understand that everything is theory until the moment you have that kid. And then the rubber meets the road. So I would tell people it's a leap of faith. It is a complete leap of faith. It is totally, because it is the scariest thing. When my wife and I had our first child, we were not well off financially by any stretch of the imagination. We weren't making six figures. We weren't even making high five figures. And there were months where my wife and I could not go out to eat and were on beans and rice because my wife, who had had a double mastectomy before we had kids, couldn't breastfeed. So we were on formula, which is really expensive. And we were very prideful, too. I've got to admit this. We were very proud. We didn't want to ask for help. We didn't want to rely on other people. We wanted to do it ourselves. But in the process, it also helped us realize what we can sacrifice to take care of the family, which we would have never known. I don't want to dissuade you from being financially responsible. I don't want to do that. But at the same time, I do want to tell you, it's all theory till you have that kid. And honestly, it's all theory until the kid pukes on you the first time.
Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yes, exactly. And I will tell you, kids will punch you in the face and hit you where you don't want to be hit, and it's all part of growing up, and you learn to sing soprano every once in a while when you got a kid.
But yeah, I understand where you're coming from.
Thanks for taking the time to call to talk about this, and two, the Institute for Family Studies, just Google it. And if you go to the Institute for Family Studies, Brad Wilcox, great guy. He's got a great Twitter account to follow. They've got lots and lots of research on the finances of kids. One of the things I like is they're big on thinking about how can we change the tax code to incentivize people like you to not worry and know that you're going to be taken care of if you take the leap to have kids. Because frankly, you get married and there is a marriage penalty. So how can we get rid of the marriage penalty in taxes? I actually have a friend who's gay. and he and his partner refused to get married because of the tax penalty. They're like, you heterosexual people, y'all screw each other in the tax code with this marriage penalty. It's like, yes, yes, it's true. And then so what do you do with like the earned income tax credit and child credits and incentives? If I were king for a day, frankly, I would put into our tax code that when you have a child, the year your child is born, you will not pay federal income taxes that year. That's personally my view on things, but they won't make me keep
that
for a day.
That's a very similar solution to what I was looking at, too. I mean, you have to lower the barrier of entry, especially just for that first year, because it's so critical and so difficult.
Yeah, and you know, also here, also one last point, and I'll let you go, is the tax code and finances now, everyone is so put upon by finances and budgeting and keeping up with the Joneses and everything else. It really, particularly at your age, I mean, my kid's headed into college, and she's already freaked out about this stuff. We don't do each other favors by obsessing about this, and yet that's our society.
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, you go have a great weekend, Matt. It's great talking to you. Before I get out of here, I want to take Ray's call, which is also on this topic. Ray, welcome.
Hey, how you doing, Eric?
Great. What's going on?
I was listening to your show about the people who are struggling, not having this and that. When I was in my late teens and early 20s, I got out of the service when I was 19. That was in 1966. My wife and we had our first child. We went to go buy a house. They wouldn't let me have a house because I was making a car payment. The interest rate on the house was over 19%.
Wow.
I had to sell the car and take one from my parents so I could go buy this house. And at 19% interest rate, and the house was only like $48,000 back then. And that was back in 69. Mm-hmm. And they only were at a 19% interest rate. You can struggle. You can make it. The kids were the best part of my life. Because we couldn't go anywhere. We spent more time with them. We were a happy family, but we were broke. But there was a lot of times I worked 18, 19 hours a day, fell asleep in my truck, got 4 or 5 hours sleep, and went right back to work. These people don't know what it is to struggle.
Yeah.
Now that I'm in my high 70s, I'm pretty well off. I learned to invest. I took classes on everything. So me and my wife are sitting pretty. And at 77 right now, I'm still working. I work part-time.
Good for you.
It gives me something to do.
Yeah,
and I love my life.
You know, I'm glad you raised that point, Ray, because for everyone out there right now who's freaked out about the interest rates being where they are, I remember my parents telling me when they bought their house, they bought a fixer-upper antebellum home in rural Louisiana, and like it was, I want to say theirs was 17% interest. In, I think, the 1970s when they bought it. People forget how high interest rates were back then. And you can say, well, the house was valued less. But in inflationary terms, it was still a sizable investment for them, particularly what people made back at the time. And we judge ourselves based on our parents to a degree, but we forget about inflationary costs. We forget about interest rates and things like that. I will tell you, Matt, if you're still listening, I don't want to be dismissive of your concerns because I had them too. But I will tell you, it is a real leap of faith, and it, whether you believe or not, it's a leap of faith. You've got to understand that everything is theory until you have the kid. And if you keep waiting, you got to get to a certain point of finances and saving before you have the kids. You're never really going to get to a point where you feel comfortable. And that's part of the psychology of this is you wait and you save and you wait and you save. And then you have something else and you have another emergency. At some point, you got to fish or cut bait on having kids. And the people who do have kids and stay married are the people who are the most productive and the most well-off when they hit retirement. Having kids forces you to make sacrifices you don't otherwise have to make, and in making those sacrifices, you're able to reprioritize your life to live a more comfortable long-term existence. And it's so scary and counterintuitive to so many people. That's why I say it's a leap of faith, because you're not going to believe it until you do it. And it's not going to be easy at first. It was not easy for us at first. There were months to pay the power bill. Like I said, to pay the power bill and provide formula, we had to give up stuff. And it's never fun. But also, long term, it's put us in a better position. And, you know, ultimately we got to a point where I wound up working multiple jobs so my wife could stay home with the kids, because we found out all of her income was going to daycare anyway. So why don't you stay home with the kids and I'll go get an extra job, and made that sacrifice. And it's worked out great for us as a family. I'm not saying my life is your life, but also when you're willing to make those sacrifices long term, it actually works out financially for the benefit of your whole family. Everybody wants to be rich. Wealth doesn't buy happiness, but you come closest to happiness the moment you hold that child in your hands. Okay, I just got to say, when it rains, it pours, it seems like. So last week, Charlie and I go out of town to do the station tour down in Florida. The dog gets incredibly sick, all better now, and the dryer breaks. Now I'm out of town, and my wife calls me and says, hey, if you look and see that Gunner, the son, is still home, she says he woke up in exceeding pain in his eye, took him to the doctor, and he's got an ulcer on his cornea. And essentially, the prescription is knock him, give him something to make him sleep, but open his eye every hour and put drops in. Like, fun times at my house when I go out of town. I don't know that they're going to let me go to Las Vegas next week for the super secret meeting of the vast right-wing conspiracy. Oh, boy. Family. And again, this just the theme of the hour here, not intentionally, is, y'all, you don't really know anything about life until you have kids, because they rock your world for the better, generally, for the better. But the things you got to spend money on and prioritize, and also there's a level of humility. Like, my wife and I were really bad about wanting help when we had our first kid. Like, to this day, my wife hates to be on the food list at church if something goes wrong at the house. Like, she's not, no, we're not going to ask people to bring us meals. We'll manage. We'll DoorDash. We'll do something. We're not asking people to. It's sometimes, you know, pride kind of overwhelms you. And just it causes all sorts of other burdens. And oftentimes kids are humbling. Kids make kids force you sometimes to have to be humble and make sacrifices you otherwise wouldn't want to do, but yet you need to. And they build a lot of memories for you. Our time around the kitchen table at night eating supper is some of the funniest moments of my life. Now, I got to tell you about Stamps.com and how Stamps.com can save money for you or for your business if you ship a lot of packages. Now, listen, I realize Stamps.com isn't for everybody, but if you ship a lot of packages, if you're one of those artistic types that sells stuff online, or you got a lot of grandkids and you're shipping them a lot of packages all the time, or you're a small business or a big business and you send a lot of packages, Stamps.com saves you money because you get up to 89% off UPS and post office rates. And all you have to do is go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and put in Eric, E-R-A-C-K. You'll get a free digital scale. By the way, I've been a member of Stamps.com for so long, they never sent me the free digital scale, but they'll send you one. They'll send you some free postage. I got that when I signed up. And you don't have a contract to sign. I never have had a contract to sign. And when I've needed to step away from Stamps.com, I did, and then come back, and there's never been a penalty. It's great. And then you never have to stand in line. This is what I really love about Stamps.com, y'all, because I use them all the time. I never stand in line. UPS, post office, they come to me to pick up the packages. Go to Stamps.com, click on the mic, put in Eric, E-R-I-C-K.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Carol Burnett is 91 years young today. If you're younger than me, you don't know who Carol Burnett is. Philip, just go on YouTube and search for Carol Burnett Went with the Wind. Carol Burnett Gone with the Wind. I have introduced my kids to that sketch. So when I was a kid overseas, they showed the Carol Burnett show, and it was several years old by then. But we would see the episodes as a kid, and that was like bleeding edge television for us, was to watch reruns of the Carol Burnett show that were years out of date, but it was fantastic stuff. 91 years old, and she's in a new TV series on Apple TV Plus, the Palm Royale or something like that. My wife's seen. She says it's a weird show. Okay, so as I mentioned, I'm encouraged by this. The Heritage Foundation went into the swingiest of the swing states, Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. They targeted the 9 swingiest counties in those swing states, and then they targeted the swingiest voters in the swingiest counties of the swingiest states. We're not talking swingers. No, 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 no. They didn't look at, well, they did go to Las Vegas, but nonetheless, you know what we mean. People, they go back and forth, Democrat, Republican, maybe they don't vote. And they focus group, they sat down with him, they did 2-hour conversations, and they polled them. You should be encouraged by this. I want to review this data for you. This morning, I moderated a panel. It was Rob Bluey and Eric Tietzel of the Heritage Foundation, and Ryan Walker of Heritage Action for America, their C4 activist wing. 55% of battleground voters believe the Biden administration is a failure. That includes 65% of swing voters, voters who've gone back and forth on the ballot. 65% of 2024 swing voters view the Biden administration as a failure. Now, this is the most notable one to me. The retrospective job approval for Donald Trump tops the Biden approval across all geographies. Across all geographies. Now, as I was telling, I was moderating the panel and I pointed this out this morning, I know how conservatives react to polling data. The point in polling data is not the number. The point is the trend. And when poll after poll after poll after poll after poll after poll shows you the same thing, the data, the number, the percentage, it may not be right, but you know where the trend is. And so even if they get the top line number wrong, maybe it's not 50%, maybe it's 40%, it still shows you in trending patterns where things stand in the country. And those hold up over time. So the polling for the Heritage Foundation shows that Donald Trump's retrospective job approval tops Joe Biden. Let me give you the numbers. So strongly and somewhat approve of Trump, 50%. Strongly and somewhat disapprove, 49%. Among swing voters, 40% approve, 55% disapprove. But now let's do Biden. 40% strongly and somewhat approve, 58% strongly and somewhat disapprove. Of the swing voters, 22% approve, 73% disapprove. And it's remarkable across the board. So Trump, and so I'm going to combine strong and somewhat approve, and then I'm going to combine strongly and somewhat disapprove. It's 51-49 approve in Arizona, 54-45 approve in Georgia, 49-50 approve in Michigan, disapprove is higher. In Nevada, it's 49-50 again, disapprove higher. In Pennsylvania, it's 50-49, approve. In Wisconsin, it's 47-51, disapproval wins. So Arizona and Georgia, it's majority. In Michigan and Nevada, it's tied, basically. And in Pennsylvania, it's only definitively against Trump in Wisconsin. But now let's compare that to Biden. It's 38-61 disapprove Arizona, 39-58% disapprove in Georgia, 40 approve, 58 disapprove Michigan, 38-58 disapprove in Nevada, 40-58 disapprove Pennsylvania, 44-55 in Wisconsin, disapproval there 55. Biden is worse off everywhere in every category. Now, and again, the numbers, let's say, okay, let's take Arizona. 38 disapprove of Biden, 61, or 38 approve of Biden, 61 disapprove. Okay, maybe it's 70-30. Maybe it's 40-60. Maybe it's 50-50. But here's the thing. If you look at this New York Times Siena College poll, the NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, the ABC Washington Post poll, the CBS poll, the CNN poll, the Fox News poll, the Marist poll, the Emerson poll. The trend is the same in every single one, that the retrospective job approval of Donald Trump tops Joe Biden's current approval rating. More people think fondly of the Trump administration now than did the day he left office. That's a huge, huge problem for Democrats. Few swing voters prefer the Biden administration's approach across a wide range of issues. 51% of voters oppose his dealing with immigration, handling of immigration. 54% oppose his handling of the economy. 50% believe he is not maintaining peace and stability in the world. 46% believe he's not helping people with the rising cost of living. 47% believe he's not keeping families safe and secure. The only two issues that Joe Biden really wins on are dealing with healthcare costs and dealing with student loan debt. But by the way, those are two of the least important issues for voters. If the election were held today, Donald Trump would win 5 of the 6 swing states, thereby winning the presidency. He'd win swing voters by 5 points. He'd win Arizona by 6, Georgia by 10, Michigan by 6, Nevada by 7, Pennsylvania by 4. Biden would win Wisconsin by 1. Swing voters blame Joe Biden's policies for the border and inflation, less so for increasing violent crime. They don't really blame him for that very much, only by 3 points. And then they were asked this, what do you support? Grow the economy by eliminating barriers for businesses and plans to bring down the cost of living by cutting out of control government spending, promising to secure the border, and put in place tougher penalties for violent criminals. Do you prefer that or do you prefer this? Grow the economy by investing in clean energy and bring down the cost of living by cracking down on corporate price gouging. Fight for access to abortion and defend democratic institutions from extremists. Those are the paths forward. Who do you prefer? The people who want to eliminate barriers to businesses and bring down costs of living by cutting out of control government spending and secure the borders and take on violent crime, or the people who want to do clean energy and crack down on corporate gouging and provide access to abortion and scream about democracy? Well, 52% of all voters go with the GOP position, 43% Biden. Among swing voters, it's 52-37, lean towards the right. The conservative agenda, by the way, performs best in Michigan and outperforms most of the Rust Belt. The only place where the Democrats really outperform on the progressive agenda is in Wisconsin. And even that, overall, the conservative agenda still outperforms, even as Biden wins. The conservative agenda outperforms Donald Trump among older white and black voters, but Donald Trump's name outperforms among young voters. Think about that for a minute. So older voters like the agenda, the conservative agenda. They don't like Trump. Younger voters actually like Trump. They don't like the conservative agenda, but he still does very well with them. Swing voters, however, do see corporate greed as a cause of inflation, and they don't see the supply chain issues as a big one. They've bought the talking points. You see why Joe Biden is talking about corporate greed and out-of-control fees, because he does well there. And voters say they're economically stressed about the future and savings and health care. Voters, by the way, also overwhelmingly believe that we need to reduce government spending. Government spending is a significant issue for swing voters. Most voters believe immigration is a national security issue, not a humanitarian issue. 56-37. 37% say it's a humanitarian issue. 56% say it's a security issue. Of the 56 who say it's a security issue, overwhelmingly they want to secure the border. And overwhelmingly, even Democrats support deportations. drugs and crime top the concerns about border security. Swing voters are over-concerned about the strain on social services. Now, what does that mean? It's not that they're overly concerned more than necessity. It's that that's on their mind, that social services are being stretched too thin. Only 39% of the public overall believes that social services are being stretched too thin. 46% of swing voters believe that. 50% of swing voters believe drugs are getting into the country, and 44% of them believe crime is rising as a result of criminals getting into the country. Battleground voters have way more confidence in the Remain in Mexico position of Donald Trump and support building a border wall. Now, here's interesting. Voters blame politicians, not police, for the rise in crime. They blame local prosecutors and local elected officials and elected state officials and the federal government. Conservatives who run on tough on crime positions, overwhelmingly supported by the public. Now, notably, and this one is very interesting to me, more people think crime is linked to environmental and cultural factors than insufficient law enforcement. Let me read you the two standards that Heritage presented. And again, if you're just tuning in, this is the data from the Heritage Foundation. They surveyed swing voters in the 9 biggest swing counties in the 7 biggest swing states. 59% of voters, 58% of swing voters agreed with this. Crime is primarily a product of environmental factors such as poor economic conditions, lack of education, and not enough community support and government resources. Only 32% said crime is primarily a product of insufficient law enforcement resources and action. That plays well for the Democrats, except in the real-world application, the Democrats aren't actually pursuing law enforcement and locking people up, and that becomes a problem. Now, Black and Hispanic voters are more likely than white voters to think crime is a product of environmental cultural factors. White voters overwhelmingly think it's a product of insufficient law enforcement. What is one of the biggest issues that swing voters are concerned about with young people? Social media. Voters, especially if they're parents, are more likely to feel there's a problem with age-inappropriate discussions of sexual orientation in K-12 schools. In fact, 52% of voters say there's a problem with age-inappropriate discussions in school. In Georgia, that's 55%. 49% moms, 54% dads, 56% married moms, 50% of swing voters. Survey voters identify a problem with age-appropriate discussions about sexual orientation and gender identity when asked about high school as opposed to K-12. 53% of voters believe there's age-inappropriate discussions in high schools. 51% believe it's overall K-12 schools. And voters, particularly parents, are more likely to feel there's a problem with age-inappropriate discussions of sexual orientation in schools. By 2-1, voters think discussions of sexuality in K-12 schools should be left up to parents, not the school. And by the way, Black voters who voted for Joe Biden in 2020 overwhelmingly believe that LGBTQ issues should not be brought up in school at all. 63% of Black voters believe that these issues should be left to parents. Remarkable, remarkable data from the Heritage Foundation. You can get online at heritage.org. I put it out on social media. It's really fascinating to read. Now, I'm going to tell you about Hillsdale College, which is advocating for conservative thought. And one of the ways they do it with their educational mission is to give away copies of Imprimis for free. They mail it to you. And if you want a copy of it, it is completely free. There's no harm, no foul. Just sign up for Imprimis. You get it every month in your mailbox. You go to Eric, E-R-I-C-K, ericforhillsdale.com. Eric, E-R-I-C-K, ericforhillsdale.com. You get Imprimis in your mailbox every month. Now, what is it? Well, it's a small publication that stimulates your mind, that has articles, commentary, and the transcripts of speeches of conservatives at Hillsdale College, leading conservatives, Christopher Rufo, Heather McDonald, Victor Davis Hanson, Larry Arnn, so many more. Not me yet, but I'm working on that. It's available at Eric, E-R-I-C-K, ericforhillsdale.com. Imprimis is thought-provoking. I have literally subscribed to Imprimis since I was in law school. It has followed me around from apartment to rental house to primary house to new house. Imprimis is fantastic. I have gotten it since law school. I read it every month. You go to Eric, E-R-I-C-K, ericforhillsdale.com. You sign up for it today. You never pay a penny for it. Hillsdale sends it to you, ericforhillsdale.com. Greetings and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. Somebody out near Monroe needs to do a well check on my buddy David. I just saw this headline in the Miami Herald. Man blasting turkey calls at neighbors gets charged with stalking. That's totally something he would do. Oh, my gosh. Except this is some old guy. Of course, it's a Florida man. You know, when I mentioned Florida man last week when I was in Orlando, some very sincere Marine came up to me to inform me that Florida man is actually the Yankees who have moved down from New York. And then right after him was a very nice lady who whispers in my ear, "No, they're natives." Oh, my goodness gracious. All right. By the way, if you want to see the stuff about the Heritage Foundation, I put it on social media, but also you can go to heritage.org. You can find it there. It's their Focus 2024 stuff. So I got to tell you, it's very funny to me that the left is having a meltdown about the Supreme Court hearing yesterday over Trump. This is the legal commentator moron on MSNBC.
Nothing that happened today with the Supreme Court being in the tank for Donald Trump is surprising
at
to
all.
You.
No.
It's not surprising to me.
At all.
It's not surprising to your viewers at home. You know why? Because we're not stupid, all right? Donald Trump called his shot months ago. He said, "My Supreme Court justices will never let this happen to me," and he was absolutely right.
Yep.
So with that information, my question to the American people is now, what are you prepared to do?
So what they're upset about is that Trump's not going to be put on trial tomorrow and executed on Monday. The Supreme Court is taking their time to decide the matter, and they don't like that Trump's not going to have a show trial before the election. They don't like that the justice system works for a man like Donald Trump. They are the authoritarians they warned us about.